The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from KHUH LP 104.9 FM Seattle, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Hope you're ready, because this week's Thunderbolt radio show reveals a recent event that really sucked. Not saying something these days. I describe my hometown. We report on some mixed results in raising the minimum wage. We report on First Look Media's censoring of the Snowden files. And for the feature piece this week, we gaze deep into the Thunderbolt's navel. Be careful, you could get lost in there. Yes, kids, it's news from an angle that you probably never considered before. Perhaps for good reason. Welcome to the Thunderbolt. You know, every once in a while, some event will come along that completely takes the wind out of my sails. Such events often leave me asking, WTF? And then being completely unable to come up with an acceptable answer. Now, the catalyst of my most recent dudgeon was the feud betwixt Nancy Pelosi and the four freshman congresswomen known collectively as the Squad. Now, the Squad consists of four women of color who are actually representing their constituents rather than their campaign donors. And thus, their conflicts with Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the Democratic Party leadership. And then the rump, evidently thinking to cash in on internecine Democratic Party dissension, subsequently started his own one-man campaign trashing the four members of the squad, and he did it by resorting to such blatant in-your-face race baiting that most of the news outlets reporting upon his comments were simply calling them racist, rather than their standard practice of saying some weasel words like, "Some people think that his comments may be racist." That is not what knocked me on my ass recently, though. Nothing that the rump does or says surprises me anymore, except every once in a while, when he does or says something good. The first thing I found totally depressing about the situation is that it is already obvious that the Democrats are going to, once again, try to run their campaigns upon identity politics and upon maintaining the current status quo, rather than focusing upon the economic and social justice issues that lie at the heart of everything else. And running on identity politics is the best way that I can think of to assure four more years of the rump. And frankly, I don't think this country can handle four more years of the rump. However, here is the thing that really messed me up. In response to the rump's blatant appeal to overt racism, his approval rating rose by 5% amongst Republicans, and his overall approval rating rose to 50% for the first time since his presidency began. And this leads me to believe that the two Americas are so diametrically opposed that there is no possibility of reconciliation. And the takeaway is that the rump is experiencing spectacular political success with his divisiveness, with his witch-blaming, and by simply fanning the flames of the hatreds that lie at the bottom of our political traumas to the point wherein I fear some kind of frigging civil war may well be in the offing. And I can't help but ask, WTF? And when I ask that question, I can think of no answer that is acceptable. However, not doing anything is not an option. So we must carry on. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for August 16th, 2019. We're going to start off this week's show with the seven deadly sins of Gilligan's Island. We see Gilligan represented sloth. The skipper represented vengefulness. Ginger personified lust, while Marianne displayed envy. The professor exhibited pride, while Thurston Howell demonstrated greed. And Mrs. Howell represented gluttony. In all of my extensive travels for all of those decades,
früh am Morgen
all across North America,
und versammeln sich zu ihrem Ballett. Sie schwingen ihre Besen in die Luft und drehen sich im Kreis.
I have met people,
jetzt stellen wir uns alle in eine Reihe und tanzen
who have heard of my hometown,
tanzen das Karottenballett.
Of Ridgecrest,
1, 2, 3,
California, less than a dozen times. Therefore, I was very surprised when I recently heard Ridgecrest mentioned on the national news. Unfortunately, Ridgecrest was in the news because it was the epicenter of the largest earthquake to strike California in over 20 years. Well, a couple of my high school acquaintances are likely still there. I myself escaped from that place in the early 70s, and I no longer have any friends or family in the area. And so my direct personal concern lies simply in the fact that I grew up there. Now, the town is called Ridgecrest, even though it sits at the bottom of the valley. The adjacent military base is called China Lake, even though there is no water in China Lake. And it is a United States Naval base that is hundreds of miles from the nearest ocean. And it is a military base that has tens of thousands of people working there during the average working day, but hardly any of those people are actually in the military. The China Lake Naval Weapons Center is where the Navy employs some of the finest minds in the country to work upon inventing inventive new ways to kill people. The Sidewinder missile, for instance, was created and tested at the China Lake Naval Weapons Center. And almost all of the employees that work at China Lake are civilian, civil service workers. And most of those are engineers and or scientists. My own father was a radar engineer with a secret security clearance. And thus, Ridgecrest was largely populated by a bunch of well-paid government tech nerds, and Ridgecrest was sort of like an upper middle-class suburb, except there was nothing but sagebrush and lizards for 100 miles in any direction, because Ridgecrest sits in the middle of a desert. And Ridgecrest is, in fact, about as far as you can get from anywhere else and still remain anywhere at all within the contiguous borders of the United States outside Nevada. Death Valley is the closest place anyone has ever heard of, and even that is over 100 miles away from Ridgecrest. Now, a lot of these civil service employees had moved to Ridgecrest from one of the San Diego naval facilities because their kids were getting into drugs. And they evidently moved to Ridgecrest under the assumption that their kids would not be able to get drugs out in the middle of the desert. Thus, they took a bunch of kids with a propensity to do drugs and put them all together out in the middle of nowhere and in a place where there was absolutely nothing for teenagers to do but do drugs. Huh. What could go wrong? In 1969, my sophomore year, proportionally more students at Sherman E. Burroughs High School in Ridgecrest, California, admitted to regular drug use than in any other high school in the entire state of California. And I was one of them. I'll tell you about that sometime. Then, just to throw one more unique monkey wrench into the situation, Ridgecrest also somehow became a popular hideout for outlaw bikers who were being sought by the police. There was an entire network in Ridgecrest that provided them with new identities and with jobs. And one of my best friends, when I was a teenager, was the younger brother of the president of the Gents, who were out of Las Vegas. And for a couple of years, I was kind of like the kid that the bikers would let hang around. And I'll tell you about that sometime as well. So most people seem to have a lot of trouble accepting facts that run counter to what they already think. I was an enthusiastic promoter of raising the minimum wage. Because when you put more money into the pockets of working people,
Lord, I got to raise a fuss, Lord, I got to raise a holler.
And especially when you put more money into the pockets of poorer people,
about a working on summer just to try to earn a dollar,
then they immediately go spend that money.
Lord, I tried to call my baby, I tried to get a date,
thus providing a big boost for the economy.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do. Lord, there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
And I didn't really want to hear,
oh, well, my mama, papa told my son, you got to make some money,
about any downside to raising the minimum wage. But when the facts come in,
when you want to use a car to go ride next Sunday,
then the facts are whatever they are.
I didn't go to work, I told the boss I was sick.
And evidently, unlike a lot of other people,
sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do. Lord, there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
I can usually accept and incorporate new facts into my narrative. But anyway,
I got to take my problem to the United Nations.
You remember a while back how right-wingers tried to characterize minimum wage workers?
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do. Lord, there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
As consisting mostly of teenagers living at home. While there is indeed such a demographic, that characterization that these kids represented even a substantial minority of minimum wage workers turned out to be pure bullshite. Surprise, surprise. Well, according to a study done on the effects in Seattle, when they raised their minimum wage, it turns out that teenagers living at home are one demographic that is actually hurt by raising the minimum wage. And it turns out that while raising the minimum wage does indeed help experienced people who are already in the workforce, at the same time, employers are more reluctant to hire new, inexperienced people.
I've got to take the weeks, I've got to have up my vacation.
It's like everyone moved up a rung on the ladder, but they sawed off the bottom rung.
I've got to take my problem to the United Nations.
Thus, raising the minimum wage, evidently,
I told my congressman and he said, whoa, dig this boy.
It makes it much harder for new job seekers.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do. Lord, there ain't no cure for the summertime.
To initially,
wow, no, ain't no cure,
break into the workforce. And in addition, while experienced workers did indeed enjoy a modest increase in their overall net income, the lowest wage workers had their hours cut to the point where they actually experienced no financial benefit overall, and in many individual cases, there was even a decrease in net income as a result of raising the minimum wage. In order for the bottom-up economic stimulus to work, there has to be more money for the bottom. While raising the minimum wage helps overall, it could help a lot more than it does. Yes, there is a big difference between kids living at home and people who are paying rent and raising family. Raising the minimum wage helps the latter, while the kid living at home is not going to starve or become homeless if he does not get a job. Still, the fact that it is harder for kids to break into the job market is a big problem. They fail to obtain vital job skills. It sets their overall economic progress back. And it is especially problematic if there are student loans crying out for repayment. Those loan sharks know how to cry out, believe me. And I would also mention the fact that unemployed and directionless teenagers are often noted for their ability to find highly problematic activities in which to engage in lieu of anything better to do. So surely there are workarounds for this problem. Tax breaks for hiring new workers comes immediately to mind. So I guess our next step would be to figure out how to work around that problem. That wouldn't be that much of a problem if the right people would put in the right energy. You may remember that I expressed deep concerns back in the day when Pierre Omidyar purchased First Look Media, because that meant that Mr. Omidyar was also the new, quote, owner, unquote, of the Snowden files. Then, evidence emerged that Edward Snowden was actually a CIA disinformation agent, whose job was to both take the NSA down a peg because the CIA felt the NSA was getting too big for its britches. And another job that Edward Snowden took on was to terrify everyone so that he could sell the public on purchasing encryption technology that had been developed by developers who were themselves closely connected to the CIA. Well, First Look Media has just announced that they are, quote, locking up, unquote, the Snowden files, and the public will no longer have access. Bada boom. Laura Poitras, at least, was not in on this, and she is now just as much in the dark as the general public is. Barrett Brown is utterly outraged. I have not been able to discern Glenn Greenwald's role in all of this yet, but I will be checking that out as well. Since my predictions are so often so dire, I really hate it that I am almost always eventually proven to be right. And on that note, it is time to take a quick station break. We'll be back in just a minute. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt.
This portion of the Jimmy Dore Show is brought to you by the Malibu Center for Despair. Seriously bummed out because of that thing your mom did when you were 11? Check in and commiserate with well-off people who feel sorry for themselves just like you. The Malibu Center for Despair. If you can afford to come here, you can afford to dwell on even the smallest things that poor people struggling to survive often overlook. Our opulent 67-acre campus, located on the schmancy shores of the Pacific, is the perfect environment for you to forget about the shortcomings associated with a lack of character-building adversity, so you can focus on what's really important, the unfair life of only getting most of what you want. The Malibu Center for Despair. We'll pay attention to you, unlike your dad who was always golfing with his business associates. It's the best self-absorption money can buy. Yes, every day is a pity party at the Malibu Center for Despair. Now back to the Jimmy Dore Show, already in progress.
And meanwhile, our biannual electoral dog and pony show has begun.
A man in love.
And the field
is always a fool
for the Democratic Party's
and loses a coup.
Nomination for president
loses a coup.
Is exceptionally diverse.
He's trying to be serious, a little bit mysterious, but then he gets no also being serioso.
We have a black billionaire, an Asian millionaire, an Hispanic millionaire, a female millionaire,
he loses the coupe,
a dumb white millionaire,
a little stupid,
and even a black female
a little bit of a fool
millionaire.
Becoming a tool.
Yes, kids.
Tool of love.
Every hue
tool of love
of the 1% is fully represented. So I must now issue a warning to my listeners.
Shivering, stuttering, a man in love.
This week,
shivering, stuttering, a woman.
The Thunderbolt
shivering, stuttering,
is going to indulge
shivering,
in some navel gazing. If a corporation can be a person, then I guess a radio show can have a navel, eh? Before getting lost in the Thunderbolt's navel, though, I want to touch base with the fundamental,
an unexpected
foundational
smile.
Thing here.
A blink of her eyes.
I wish to emphasize, stretch, accentuate, call attention to, underline, underscore, point out, point up. Once again,
he's trying to be serious, a little bit mysterious, but then he gets up also being serious.
How absolutely vital an informed public is to a functioning democracy. There is a very good reason why the press was the only private enterprise that was given special consideration in the United States Constitution. And there is a very good reason why the press is called the fourth branch of government.
Is walking away.
That was also
a man in a mess.
The very good reason.
Got nothing to say.
Why the U.S. Postal Service,
not even a guess,
was the number one budget priority of the United States government for the first 100 years of its existence. For this represented a massive government subsidy to assure a flourishing free press. And it worked awesomely. Often, to the very great distress of some of the framers themselves. As it ironically turned out. You see, the framers knew well that the media is our watchdog, and they knew full well the need for such watchdogs is never ceasing and relentless. They say that over and over again in the Federalist Papers. Since that time, though, our media has been bought and paid for and transformed from a watchdog into a lapdog. And that is the reason that I now spend so much unrecompensed time producing this radio program and publishing the Associated Newsletter. I consider the number one absolutely vital thing that absolutely positively must happen is the education of Americans about what is really going on around here, because that is the key to the revolution. In doing this, though, I am in direct competition with a massive multi-billion dollar media machine that has been showering a well-financed and well-researched waterfall of counter-narrative down upon our little heads for several decades now. And by this point, everyone is nearly drowned. In addition, the machine narrative is generally comforting and pleasant, whilst mine is generally quite the opposite. Their arguments are much easier to accept, and people are naturally more inclined to favor their narrative. Often, even in cases where they know the narrative is false, because that narrative is so much more emotionally appealing than my apocalyptic doomsday sky is falling hysteria. people will often prefer the machine's narrative, even in cases where they know that I am right. The machine has spent and continues to spend a whole bunch of serious cash studying how to manipulate public perceptions. And they've been spending a whole bunch of serious cash implementing the best practices that their studies have revealed. And I see no ethical problems with us stealing their research and using it for the good guys. Yes, double-edged swords can be a real biatch. The fact is, though, that the machine is winning. They have largely succeeded in installing a faux reality that has little to do with actual reality. Their money and their bombs and their missiles, these are actually of highly limited utility, as the U.S. military has been finding out over the last few decades. The United States military has won every battle that is fought since World War II, but it has lost every war that it has fought since World War II. No, the machine's most potent weapon is not a bomb or a missile. It is their ability to shape reality.
Sleeping awake and awake when I'm sleeping.
And then using that reality to inculcate public apathy.
On sunny days, all I can see is the shadow.
The central wall I hit,
and I'm not above
when trying
being under
to activate people.
I'm at the brink.
It's not a counter-argument in favor of the status quo.
And I always hide when it's my turn to see.
People who do that,
my only belief is not to have faith in belief.
Are usually dedicated idiots anyway.
I'm over.
And talking to them is usually pointless. No, rather than hearing arguments, trying to justify anything, I instead hear this over and over.
Disconnected.
That's just the way it is. There's nothing we can do about it.
Keep holding my breath while I'm trying to breathe.
Well, I can assure you that the machine's gravelly, metallic laugh booms out sinisterly whenever he hears anyone say that. That is exactly what the machine wants you to think. Encouraging you to think this way is why they spend the big bucks on all the propaganda. I find this widespread belief in our helplessness to be truly maddening, because the provable fact is that once a grassroots critical mass makes a decision about something, then that something almost always gets done. And what that means is that not only can we indeed do something about it, but indeed, we are the only ones that can do anything about it. This "we can't do anything" argument is provably false. But no one knows this because, again, the bad guys own all of the media. And the fact that we can actually do something about it is probably the very last thing that they want us to know. All in all, I'm disconnected. And that is it for the news and commentary section for this week's show. In order to get you reconnected, I'm going to fill out the rest of the hour with some music. This is Native American artist John Trudell. Enjoy.
Great search for truth. Every meaning has a meaning. Dark and light have their reasons. Live and learn are the seasons.
Bone days.
Bone days. With all that's left. Motions of everydayness and thoughts that won't leave. Leaving behind another sameness. Bone days, when all that's gone brings life to your knees. You don't know what to pray, so you keep making pleas. crazy horse. We hear what you say. One earth, one mother. One does not sell the earth. The people walk upon. We are the land. How do we sell our mother? How do we sell the star? How do we sell the air? Crazy horse, we hear what you say. Too many people standing their ground, standing the wrong ground. Predator's face, he possessed a race. Possession, a war that doesn't end. Children of God, feed on children of earth. Days people don't care for people. These days are the hardest. Material fields, material harvest. Decoration on chain that binds. Mirrors gold. The people lose their minds. Crazy horse, we hear what you say. One earth, one mother. One does not sell the earth. The people walk upon. We are the land. Today is now and then. Dream smokes touch the clouds. On a day when death didn't die. Real world time tricks shadows lie. Red, white, perception, deception. Predator tries civilizing us. But the tribes will not go without return. Genetic light from the other side. A song from the heart. Our hearts to give. The wild days, the glory days live. Crazy horse, we hear what you say. One earth, one mother. One does not sell the earth. The people walk upon. We are the land. How do we sell our mother? How do we sell the stars? How do we sell the air? Crazy horse, we hear what you say. Crazy horse, we hear what you say. We are the seventh generation. We are the seventh generation.
Makes me wonder which generation we are. That was Crazy Horse. Before that, we had Bone Days. Both those tunes were from John Trudell. And it looks like I still got a minute here, so I'll take you out with some Mike Oldfield. Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt, nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com, and we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And a quick note here, the Thunderbolt is on Facebook, where you can find links to the show and to the show notes, or you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net, where you can also find the show notes, as well as a year's worth of downloadable episodes of the Thunderbolt.
Thank you very much.